From Glitch HQ on Riverside Avenue in...
Extra, extra!
Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Martha McGarry, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games. In this episode, your nice host bring you a Nice Games Bulletin, where we discuss the latest news from the broader world of video games, and maybe a little Star Trek, at least as latest as we're able. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. So we have a lot of Star Trek news to get to today.
Oh my God.
So
dang, I didn't even get to do my intro song.
No, it's just, this is too important.
Okay.
I can't stop like running around the room.
Yeah,
it's
they
so
just
exciting.
They just watched the Star Trek Picard trailer and they're all very, very excited.
So it'll be old news by the time you hear this episode from us.
But we literally watched it like 3 minutes ago.
The New York Comic Con panel is still going on where we're recording, or mm-hmm. or it ends in like 3 minutes or something, and they're just releasing some materials. And so we said, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Because we put it in the proper news segment. But first, we got some, also in our timeline here, just yesterday, Stephen, you showed off a new game of yours.
Yes,
yeah. Your playtest. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I showed off Rhythm Rumble at playtest. I think I talked about it in a previous episode, but I
Rhythm
am...
Rumble. Yes. Rhythm Rumble.
That's the theme song.
Do you want to do the vocals? No, it's going well. I'm doing this for my full-time job. We showed it off at playtest. I mean, I technically showed it off, but when I'm at playtest, I like have to be on and show people games and stuff.
Right, you help run the event.
Yes, so I can't like actually show a game. So my the artist who's working on the game with me, Sydney, she was the person who signed up for it. She did a good job. It seemed like it was mildly well received.
You
it's got some work.
So I played it a little bit, and I gave you a bit of a hard time.
Yeah.
I was giving you some feedback, and you did not seem happy.
It's because other people were...
Also doing that?
Yeah.
But I have a theory, which is that it's been a while since you've shown off a new game.
Yes.
So you might have forgotten how rough it can be at the start.
I have.
Right?
I did forget. It can be real rough.
But it's all good, right?
No,
it's on its way.
I got a lot of good feedback.
Yeah.
And I know, and I have at least some directions on what to do to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to my brother about the game too a bunch, and like he had some suggestions. And I know like it just, and a lot of it is like, part of it is, I guess, one of the goals I want for this game is to make the principles of fighting games more approachable, and I haven't quite reached that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to work at it more to get to that point.
Yeah, I was really excited about the setup, right? The being on a beat, because I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, when you play, like, Guitar Hero or something, like, it's basically just following instructions.
Yeah.
But you still feel like you can, like, have a lot of, like, expressiveness, and so that's kind of what I was... But I really hope this can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem I had with it a little bit is that it was a fighting game plus that.
Yeah.
And so it ended up being a larger... For me, it's not a fighting game person.
Yeah.
I suspect, as designed, because you are a fighting game person, I think if you took it to a bunch of hardcore fighting game people, they would instantly take to it.
I think.
But I don't know that that's what you want from it, right?
I mean, that is part of what I want. Yeah. So, like, I want it to be where people who are into fighting games can get it and pick up on it, and it's like it's not nearly going to be as depth or deep as like Street Fighter, but like mm-hmm. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But I would like fighting game players to like get it, almost instantly, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also like people who are into rhythm games to feel like they have an advantage over people who like are good at fighting games but not rhythm games.
Yeah.
In some way, I don't think I've gotten that point yet, but I think part of it is like I'm not emphasizing the power that the rhythm aspect of the game is putting into your gameplay.
Well, that's the new and novel part. So that's where the most invention happens.
Yeah.
Right? So that's going to be the hardest part to get right.
Yeah. So I'm still working on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it too is it was a long night. It's always a long night. When is that playtest? I enjoy like, you know, helping out playtests and stuff, but it's a lot of being on and being social and telling, introducing yourself to people you've never met and being like an active participant in their lives for a moment.
And who wants that?
Right. And it feels like a lot for 3 hours. So like at the end of the night, I think I might have been a little bit more down than I should have been towards work. That's all.
Of course, I was off in the corner just working the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is, that seems to happen every playtest, is I'll just be at my desk while everybody else is having fun.
Yeah.
I don't know why it turns out that way every time. I don't do it on purpose, I promise. But it's like, so I feel like a little bit of a humbug sometimes too.
Yeah. Well, playtest is great. Coming anyways. Even if we're a little down sometimes.
Yeah, so if you're in the Minneapolis area,
First
Fridays of every month, we have playtests. We've talked about it a lot on the show, but we don't always go over the details, kind of just take it as read, but it's a really important event If you, you know, if you got a prototype, if you have a polished game, if you're working on a new system and you don't need some feedback, or you really just want to come and see what other people are doing and socialize with other devs, it's really, really a valuable event. So if you're around, and you know, in your community, if you're not from where we're from and you can't come and play Steven's new game, you know, find something in your area like this or make it yourself. Get some people together because it's incredibly valuable to be able to do that, you know, in a way that is like, I mean, play tests are great just any way you can swing them, but having it a way where you can just invite people and have it different each time and make it more social and have it a structured regular thing, it goes a long way.
Yes. Yeah, last night was really awesome because like there were, I think, six new games that we've never seen before showed up at playtest.
And not just new games, but like new developers who hadn't brought anything before. So really, really cool.
Yeah, it went really well. I was excited for it.
So should we get to the news?
Yes. Recent releases.
Honk.
Honk.
So well, it's probably the biggest release of this month, the Untitled Goose Game.
Yes.
Honk.
It hasn't just taken over the charts because it's the number one selling game on Switch in a month that a Zelda game came out.
Yeah, wow.
That's pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. But also it took over the internet. It's very memeable, right? Yes. It was very fun. Also, Martha, it honks well, right? You can just...
Honk.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a dedicated honk button.
Yeah.
That's pretty important.
Steven, you've not played it.
I have not, no.
Because...
I'm not a fan of animals.
Despite all of his games having animal protagonists.
Yeah, I don't know how that had ended up pulling that to happen. I didn't anticipate that. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, I know any of the games I've made that I get paid to do, they don't have animals in them. So there's that.
Isn't one of the fighters in your game like a mouse?
It's like dead mouse kind of mouse. All right, fine. But I mean, I also am not really interested in like being a jerk as a goose. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That seems not fun to me.
Yeah.
But I get the appeal.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, I understand. But y'all have played it, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Martha, you have thoughts.
I do. I feel like the controversial thoughts.
Okay.
I feel like the game is better in theory than it is in execution.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I was expecting I think it would be better if it had tighter controls and like more Hitman-esque.
Something a little more skill-based.
Yes. My main problem is like in the first level, you have to make the gardener like take his hat off and you have to pull his hat off. So you have to get him to like bend over to pick something up and like getting yourself to be in the correct place so that the, like you get the prompt on the hat instead of on other objects that are around and at the correct timing to get that was really difficult. And I had to, like, I spent like 10 or like a lot of time. Mm. Most of that level was spent trying to get that done.
Yeah.
And all the rest of the things were super fun and weird. And so it was like cognitive dissonance or whatever, because it was like, oh, this is a fun, funny game. But oh, now it's super hard. And I dislike this because it feels like it's not my fault that it was hard because I couldn't get the button prompts to happen at the correct times.
Yeah.
So that's my only criticism. Otherwise, it's super fun to be a very obnoxious goose.
Yeah.
Like I like the honking.
Like I know you feel like you need to cower from the whole internet's love for this game, but having a little bit of that criticism. But I'm with you. I think that there's two types of gameplay in the game. One is a sort of puzzle solving, like because you get this checklist of stuff you have to do, which is already I'm not super excited about. I feel like there should be more discovery. I think that it's casual in that way, right? And I think that's just a matter of taste, right? It's not a I just wish it was a little bit more intricate than that.
So like you got achievements once you did a thing instead of having to have a checklist of things. Maybe?
Yeah. And there's a secret list of things that it doesn't tell you, but then when you do them, it reveals to you. I wish more of the game was just that. Right? So it became more of like here's a space and how do you navigate it? And now I've figured out how to navigate it. How do I manipulate it? And then what is my ultimate goal? Like that is fun to discover, but instead you just get a list of things to do, which is like, it's casual. So I could totally see the design approach there. I just kind of wish it wasn't that.
Sure.
But that's one way to do it. You need to lock the gardener out of the thing. Okay. So we need to get the gardener out. That's great. And then we need to find a way to close the thing, but he just has the key. So he just unlocks it. Okay. So we need to get the key. So some of it is actually pretty good puzzle-y that way. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there are the places where it actually requires some skill like that, like the hat, or in other cases later in the game where you have to time things right. And it seems like the game, the controls and the structure of it are kind of stuck between those two notions, where like in a point and click, you have to do things in a certain order, and that's the puzzle solving. Mm-hmm. The game has a little bit of that, but it doesn't have enough of that to be that intellectually engaging. And then on the other hand, there's the sort of the Hitman style of like making sure you hide at the right time, you know, wait for a certain cycle, and it has a little bit of that, but it's not tight enough of a system for that to really work. And so it gets by on charm because honk, like, yeah. And in the end, like, I have to wonder what the design team, when they were coming up with how they do this, I'd like to think, to give them the benefit of the doubt, is that these are conscious decisions. Mm-hmm. That they made the game kind of loose and not great and not perfect for this or that, so that it could just be kind of fun.
Yeah.
And maybe it didn't set my, you know, world on fire, but like, I kind of have to just trust that that's what they wanted to do. But part of me thinks like, oh, I wish they could have maybe did a little bit more with the concept, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to Goose Game 2 or another game similar.
Goose, like, Harder?
Yes. But like, this is also like super inspirational to me, the Goose Game is, because like, it's kind of Grammar Crime-esque, yeah. Like how I was thinking of it is like, you know, here is a stealthy game, mm-hmm. where you have to do all these things. But you're also a goose, like this ridiculous character, and that's kind of the like melding together of things that I want Grammar Crime to be like, except I want it to be multiplayer and like emulating Payday, etc.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I want people to strategize like they would, but the character they're strategizing for will be something completely ridiculous. Then that's what I really like about Goose Game is, yeah. Like, here's this game that uses all these like mechanics from other types of games, except you're a goose and you get to be really annoying. And the I think the animation and everything of the goose is so good. Like, it's so perfect for how gooses act, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really fluid. Geese. Like, it's not a complicated array of animations, but they're all really well blended. And it feels pretty, even when you get caught, like in a way that you can tell that the game is kind of clipping you funny, like it all looks good. Like it's a really nice finesse of those limited animations and essentially very simple collision detection in a way that makes it all look pretty realistic.
Yeah.
In the end.
I say 10 out of 10 for Goose Physics.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think thinking about this, because we are gearing up to launch Widget Satchel, and now there's a zeitgeist for animals behaving badly.
Yeah.
Widget Satchel's got a bit of that. But what's so funny is, when we were, the concept of Widget Satchel was like, you know, this mischievous ferret, right? Mm-hmm. So it seems very aligned to what people love about Goose Game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the whole point of Goose Game is you are a horrible goose.
Yeah.
Right? And the thing I always wanted with Widget Satchel is that Sprocket the ferret is lovable.
Yeah.
And is ultimately not that, like, worth the trouble.
Yeah.
Like, I want, Sprocket's worth the trouble.
Yeah.
The goose is a jerk.
Right.
And so I worry about this, trying to like, I kind of like, well, you know what? Now's the time to sell a game with an animal that causes trouble.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, no, not the artist in me is like, it's different.
Yeah. You know? I think it is. I definitely do. Like, I enjoy playing as Sprocket because, like, I am causing mischief, but it's all like playful mischief. It's not going to cause anybody any serious harm.
Yeah. Well, like, neither does Goose.
Oh, I suppose. But I think it's the intent, maybe. The intent of the animal.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the goose just wants to cause mischief because the goose is this jerk. But like, Sprocket likes causing mischief because I think Sprocket kind of likes attention and feels like they're playing along with the everybody else in the space station.
Yeah, Sprocket doesn't really know any better.
Yeah,
like, and that's kind of the point is Sprocket is confidently going to knock things over and just doesn't realize it's annoying.
Yeah,
and the goose, that's the thing. The goose, you could describe the goose that way as well, mm-hmm. but a lot of it is about the positioning of the game. Like it's you play as a horrible goose. That's a tagline of the game. And absent that, you could interpret it differently.
Yeah.
So it's actually a really important way of like how you talk about your game and how you present it is as important as the content of it itself.
That's true.
You know, you could certainly, the goose could be sort of an innocent rascal that the town folk are just like, ah, it's that goose. Oh, you know, it's always got to deal with that goose. But like, you know, it's a local thing. It's, you know, it's part of the charm of the town.
Yeah.
But that's not what the game is telling you it is, or rather not what the sort of the the messaging around the game is. The messaging around the game is like, this freaking goose. Like, ugh, you know? And that's fun, and that has its own sort of charm. And
It brings the whole town together, something that they can rally against.
Something they can all chase after, yeah.
Yeah, that's the goose's goal in the end, is to bring the town together.
And that's the right choice for that, right?
Yeah.
Is you do kind of want to, you want to role play as a jerk. That is beneficial to the way that they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I'm like, oh, it's cool. We could, you know, try to catch that wave of attention, but like, no.
Yeah.
It's a game about Q, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
That would be a good transition to the Star Trek, but we have also other things to talk about.
Overshadowing what was supposed to be the biggest launch of this month, Link's Awakening.
That came out.
Yeah. I think we might have talked about it. We've talked about this in a previous episode, but not in a previous bulletin yet.
Yeah.
I finished it. You guys finish it yet?
No.
I haven't bought it.
I haven't even played it.
I never played it on Game Boy, so it was all brand new to me.
Yeah.
I like how old-fashioned it is, because it really is just a straight remake. Mm. Like, it all looks different, and they added some quality of life stuff. Like, all the extra buttons are put to good use.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, just imagining how you can control the massive amount of inventory items on two buttons.
Oh.
Which is, you're like, oh, well, I still have to do that X and Y on the Switch. You map to different things. Yeah. But A and B and L are permanent items. But in the original Game Boy game, those three had to be swapped out as well.
Oh.
So you could only, even lifting something up had to be equipped.
Oh, wow, really?
It's surprising how complicated that game would fit on a Game Boy. And I'm glad I never played it, I guess. But, I really liked it, and I liked how old-fashioned it was, and just felt like it's a robust campaign, but it's sort of unburdened by modernisms, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, I was sort of into it.
Okay, one of my coworkers, Jason, he played the original one,
yeah.
So he was really excited for this new one, and when he was playing it, though, he was really disappointed by he felt like it was basically the same game,
yeah.
And so, like, all of the stuff that he was frustrated with when he was playing it as a kid,
same remembered. Issues,
yeah. He's like, they could have changed some of this.
well, people would have complained.
Yeah, that's true. But like, he was disappointed with the frame rate of the game. It seems like it chugs in a lot of instances.
Yes.
And I was watching my brother play it, and like, he was playing it on the TV, and it was like still chugging whenever he switched areas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something I normally have an issue with, but like, I feel like it's constantly switching between not laggy and laggy.
Yeah, supposedly some folks have taken a modded Switch.
Mm-hmm.
So the Switch has resolution modes, right?
Yeah.
The handheld 720, TV is 1080.
Right.
It also has performance modes. In handheld, it clocks down the GPU.
Yeah.
And in a docked mode, it clocks it up, mm-hmm. basically to account for the resolution difference.
Yeah.
You cannot put it into boost mode in handheld. It's just not designed for that.
Mm-hmm.
So someone took a modded Switch and was able to do that. And actually, it runs okay.
Okay.
Handheld. It's curious to see, like, they just maybe ran out of time or something. Mm. I don't know, but people seem to be confused as to what the problem is. But yes, it does. I think because the whole overworld streams in, like, block for block, so it's all, I think as you go from section to section, it'll just, like, it'll go drop down to, like, 20 frames for just a couple of seconds. The benefit is it's not like an action game. It's not, I mean, Breath of the Wild had its share of frame rate issues in particular areas.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, there's nothing unplayable about even the worst of it.
Yeah.
So it caught my notice, and it was almost confusing just because it's Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like, how did this happen? But it didn't really bother me. Didn't really hurt my appreciation of it.
Okay. Yeah. And like I said, I haven't played it, but like, mm-hmm. I just did notice that every time. And like, it's, I found it striking that like, I don't normally notice frame rate issues. And so, like, me seeing it was like, so that's why I was
the main thing is I can't use that as an excuse for frame rate issues in my own work. The only one Nintendo did it on one of their flagship titles. People won't notice. Nah, but we won't get the leeway that Nintendo gets.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
For totally. That.
Gears 5 is on Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah, well, so we talked about this, I think, on the last bulletin that was coming out or something, but and I don't think any of us played it, right?
No, I haven't played it.
But I did read an interesting article, and we'll find that and put it in the show notes, just about the game director saying that they needed to change the design of it because it's on Game Pass, which means for a lot of people it's free, or essentially free, right?
Yeah.
And so when you buy a game, this was this is the posit in the article, is that when you buy a game, you're sunk $60.
Right.
So you're going to finish the game.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You're invested in it, right? But when you get it for free, you'll play for 10 minutes and, like, it's no loss if you don't want to finish it.
Yeah.
And so it was just interesting talking about how, like, this standard single-player campaign game, how to think about players who are a little less invested and to keep their attention a little more,
okay,
almost like a free-to-play title has to do. And so I thought that was an interesting approach for something like that. And in, you know, in the inevitable future where all of our games are subscription based or whatever,
right?
either through like platform holders like, you know, Apple Arcade or whatever, mm-hmm, or Game Pass, or because our games themselves have this. If that's the future we're marching towards, we should really think about how players, you know, what's the decision point when they decide to play our game?
Yeah.
How much of their attention do we have?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's sad, but it's interesting. It's fascinating. The more you know about it, the better you can be prepared for that future.
Yeah.
if it does finally eat us all.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
What the Golf is a golf game about not knowing what golf is.
Kind of. It has the perfect tagline. Yeah. It's a golf game made by people who are made for people who hate golf by people who don't understand golf.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's totally my jam. I played this at a GDC some time ago.
You said you loved
I've talked
it.
About it on the show before. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick that up for sure.
Cool. Obra Dinn is on consoles, which is pretty great because I might want to pick it up. It's on Switch too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think all the consoles will be out this month, okay, if not already.
I think that would be a pretty good game to play on the bus. Does it have really good music?
Yes.
Okay.
It's,
I might miss out on the music.
It's repetitive.
Okay.
You're probably okay.
Okay.
Not listening to it.
Okay.
You should, you know, go on YouTube and listen to it for a little bit.
Just
to get
sure.
the gist of it. But
right.
You're okay missing it for the gameplay.
Okay.
It's about mood setting, but if you're on the bus, you're already abandoned a little bit of that. So
I don't care at that point.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. John Wick Hex is out, which is a game about John Wick. But it's like a strategy game, right?
Yeah, I'm super uninterested in this because I don't like action movies and I don't...
I remember you watched John Wick and you were like, what? This movie sucks. And I was like, because I think you were talking about like the narrative of it. And I was like, why are you talking about the narrative of John Wick?
People love those movies because they have this like this emotional or visceral feel.
A little, yeah.
It's like, and it's a spectacle. Mm-hmm. And like, I guess I shouldn't be totally discounting it, but it doesn't work on me.
But sure. It's dog.
That doesn't work on me either. That's like... I mean,
but Mark, his dog.
His dog is all of like, I'm just supposed to believe they have this relationship? Like,
yeah, I know.
I mean, yes. If you murder a dog, then you should be punished to the fullest extent of an action hero. But
yes.
I don't know. Anyways,
yeah.
So this game is made by Mike Bithell, mm-hmm, who did Thomas Was Alone,
right, yeah,
and the Circular games.
Yes,
and yes. I'm a huge fan of his work, and so I'm like, I should at least check it out.
Yeah,
but I'm so turned off by the licensed content.
Sure,
I'm happy if people want it. Like, if people love John Wick and want to play this game, but it's also all the preview events it's been at. People say it's a really, really good game.
Okay,
so I feel like I should give it a little bit more attention than I've given it.
Just pretend it's just Keanu Reeves. And not John Wick.
See, I'm excited about the Bill and Ted movie that's coming out.
Because
I watch those.
Pretend that it's whichever one he is.
But I'm just outing myself as against everything that people love. But like, I don't know why people like Keanu Reeves so much. He seems like a cool guy, but like, that's the end of the story.
He's the coolest guy. He gave all his money to like his whole salary for one of the Matrix movies to the animators, mm-hmm, of the Matrix movies because he's like, you guys did all the stuff. Wasn't me.
Yeah.
So
I mainly
he's
like
super
him.
Chill.
Yeah. I mainly like him because he's charming.
Yeah.
That's
no,
the main reason.
I have no argument with the things people like about him. I just feel like I've got my own life to lead. I don't need to.
I'm not jumping on the whole like fan wagon that everybody else is on, but like, he seems all right. but I'm kind of interested in this game too, at least how it plays and stuff. I'm curious about that.
Yes.
I don't know how you can get like how do they get what John Wick is in a strategy setting.
That's the thing
about.
People have said is as much as I'm not interested in that being successful, mm-hmm, the people who do care about the feel of those movies say that for a game that is not essentially like a first person shooter, it somehow really captures the feel of it. So that's the we've talked about before about licensed stuff, but getting the tone of it right. Seems like they've done a really good job here.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I feel like a John Wick movie would not do well as an action game, I think, now that I think about it. Just because, like, the way that a lot of action games work is that you feel, like, super powerful. And the way John Wick works is that he is super powerful, but, like, he gets beat down all the time.
Right.
It's like he deserves his power. I don't know.
Well, action movies in general, as a filmmaking experience or film-going experience, it's all very choreographed, right?
Yeah.
It's the ballet of bullets or whatever.
Yeah.
you know, John Woo nonsense. But like, video games are much more chaotic, mm-hmm. even the ones where you are super powerful.
Yeah.
So I could see the instinct to be like, let's try something different with this kind of franchise.
Yeah.
So it seemed like they figured it out.
Yeah, I'm really curious. Mm-hmm. Ring Fit Adventure is out. Not yet, but it'll be out in a couple of weeks, which I'm excited for because mm-hmm. I liked Wii Fit U and stuff, so I want to try this one out again.
Yeah.
I've been trying to figure out a way to exercise more, and I think this is a good enough an excuse.
Yeah, I kind of want to do it too, mm-hmm. but I'm like, I don't have enough time to just to play video games regularly.
Yeah.
So how am I going to make time for this?
Well, I don't know. Did you watch the whole 7 minute, 8 minute long trailer or whatever they had?
Ooh, I don't know about that long. I've seen video. Some content.
Yeah. Well, they talked about like how they built some modes where you can just do a few mini games.
And
you can just play like 15 minutes or something here.
Oh, see, that won't work for me. I need to do a campaign.
Well, I mean, they have a campaign too, but
So like, I am just beyond repair. Like, yeah, you can't get me. I don't know. I want to. I just don't.
Okay. Work. Well, I mean, if you want to try it, I'll have it probably. So like,
oh yeah, I don't have to. Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Martha, does it excite you?
Yeah, I think it looks really cool. I'm mm-hmm. excited to see. Like, I want to be able to see more what it's like before I invest in it, but.
Well, you can borrow Steven's too when
exactly.
I'm done with it.
Yeah, exactly. There we go.
Cool. I'll never get to play it. All right. No, I'm just kidding.
I love toys and accessories and stuff, even the dumb ones. So that's part of the appeal too.
Yeah, sure. Luigi's Mansion 3 is coming out next month. Oh, right, because it comes out on October 31st.
Uh-huh.
That day. It's just the day.
Yep. Spooky.
Right. It looks cool. Not Halloween. Halloween sucks. Uh-huh. But like Luigi's Mansion 3 looks cool.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in that. I don't know that I will buy it though. I don't know. It looks cool.
I think I already pre-ordered.
Nice. Okay. Well, how about we just trade games?
Yeah, good. That's it. I did that. Nintendo has a little voucher thing. If you buy, it's like a 2-pack voucher and you save some money on games. And like, I'm just going to buy these games. Like, I'm not a big fan of pre-ordering, but if mm-hmm. I'm going to save that much money on a game, I know I'm going to get.
Yeah.
So I think I did that for this one.
Okay. Yeah. We should have a topic on pre-ordering one day. But like, mm-hmm. that's how I approach pre-orders. I know if I know I'm going to get this game, then pre-ordering it makes sense. Otherwise, don't do it.
I think I said this on the show before, but I really loved Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah.
And I had a hard time with the 3DS sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason was because it was handheld and it's hard to do that. The game is kind of slow.
Yeah.
And they did a lot to make it more bite-sized. Mm-hmm. I applaud them for that, but it was still hard to keep up with.
Yeah.
I think a console. So I'm really looking forward to that again on a console.
Well, I did play this thing at E3. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it was more arcadey than the first one. I didn't play the second one. So I felt more faster paced than the first.
Well, the second party studio that did the second one is also doing the third one.
Right.
So there might be some similarities for that reason.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it was still cool, but it definitely did feel different from the first game. Not in a bad way, just in a different way.
Yeah, Martha, do you ever play Luigi's Mansion?
No.
Did you have any interest in it at all as a franchise? Feels like a weird side thing, unless you really love it already.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am not like super into it. Yeah. So. Like, I don't even know if I owned a console that... Wait, it was on 3DS, you said?
It was on GameCube, and then 3DS.
Yeah, I didn't... I mean, I had those, but I didn't...
Yeah, okay.
It just wasn't... I mean, Mario was already a stretch, because I hate Mario.
Oh, that's right.
So, his kid brother, or older brother, or whatever, just... That was another thing removed.
Right.
So, sure. Plus, it's spooky, and I don't like scary games.
I will admit that the first game did scare me. I was like 12 or something, but that's not much of an excuse because that game is for kids.
Yeah, it's as scary as Casper the Friendly Ghost, essentially. There's a couple actually jump moments, but...
Casper, don't even get me started on Casper.
Okay, halt the show. Let's get into this.
Okay.
That ghost is the saddest thing ever. I cried at my grandparents had it on VHS, like episodes of Casper.
Yeah.
Oh my God. No, thank you. Every single time his little animal companion, like the story goes, he's a ghost. He finds an animal companion. The animal companion dies.
Wow.
And then he also becomes a ghost. It is so sad.
Oh, dang it.
Casper, the depressing ghost, more like.
Friendly but depressing.
Well, okay, so Luigi's Mansion is a little more upbeat than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you, Steven. I hate Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Like, address your letters. But but I like Luigi. So
yeah, Luigi's great.
Oh, Luigi. That was enough for me.
He's the boss.
Yeah.
Yes. that is all of the releases I guess we're going to talk about. Now I can like sit back and have y'all talk about Star Trek for a bit.
Yes.
Okay. Star Trek news. So much Star Trek news. So first thing, Martha, that Picard trailer.
Yes.
Which we were just about to record and we're like, oh, they didn't put out the trailer yet. And they're like, oh, it's out. Okay, let's halt recording and watch the trailer. So we've seen it.
It's very cool. Uh-huh. I'm sure you all have seen it by now, but it's awesome. And Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis are in it, and it's amazing. And
Seven has two blaster rifles.
Oh, and it's my like, God.
It's like super fun. I don't know.
I'm very excited. Yeah. This makes me even more excited for Picard, which is bad because I need to have low expectations so they don't get broken. But like, I'm excited.
Yeah,
I might actually subscribe to CBS All Access just to get it.
Oh, that's a scandal.
I know, right?
I really liked it. I think, just Jonathan Frakes being back is really cool. And I like that he's like this fuddy-duddy old dude in a cabin. Like, they did the same gag in Star Trek Generations, right? Where Kirk is just a guy in a cabin cooking eggs or something. And they do the same thing with Tony Stark in the Avenger movie. He's like, he goes to a cabin and just like, and so it's almost a cliche. And so normally I'm just kind of rolled my eyes at it. But for some reason, it worked on me this time. Like, I'm like, okay, I totally buy that. Like, Riker's probably too old to still be an admiral. So, like, sure, just give him a house. Like, just let him live his life, you know? And then he can, give it
Picard some good advice.
Yeah, exactly. So, whatever, I'd love, all their adventures on the Titan have all been passed now, I guess. Or they're just on leave. I don't know. Who's to say?
It's true. They could be just on leave. We don't get much context.
Yeah, it's just, you see them in such casual wear that it really feels like they're retired. But who knows, right? There's a great scene of Picard and Riker, like, arm in arm, sitting at the end of a dock. Just two old guys hanging out. It's very cute.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. Apparently, also, there was news that Discovery is going to be going to Trill, which is very exciting.
So, DS9 fans in the audience will know that Jadzia Dax and later Ezri Dax, the joined Trill species. It's a couple episodes where you learn a little bit about the Trill homeworld. And there's some of the behind-the-scenes photos they released for Discovery Season 3 shows them going to the symbiont pools on Trill. And I don't think there's any further context, but Martha and I are assuming what?
That maybe Dax is there.
Maybe. If you don't, as Steven's like, I don't care.
Y'all are saying terms, I think.
this all just sounds like Greek, I think, to people who don't understand the potential significance.
Yeah. I mean, what I do appreciate is that y'all are very excited about this thing.
Thank you, Steven.
We're so excited we have to pause our video game podcast to talk about it.
Because this is, frankly, more important to us. We also saw the first of the Short Treks episodes. So the Short Treks are just little short films that they released originally. A first batch of them was between season 1 and 2, and it was one a month leading up to season 2. So it's kind of a very clever strategy for people to sign up for CBS All Access, I think, to get them to sign up a little earlier, probably. But they were really fun, the original four of them. They were filmed on the sets they already used, and they were made cheaply. They're all little sort of vignettes, the stories you couldn't tell in the middle of an episode because they're all kind of like interesting and sort of one note and kind of like side stories. So they're doing it again this year, and there's six of them this year, which is really cool. And they're not all Discovery-based. Some of them, there's going to be an animated one or something. I don't know all the details. Mm. The first of them was released during the panel today, and we watched it together. And it was Spock and Number One on the Enterprise. For those of you who've seen the second season of Discovery, a lot of it takes place with the Enterprise crew before Kirk. And so we get a little bit more of that. It's actually a further flashback. And it was kind of silly. Steven, you liked it, right?
Yeah, I actually watched this one. And I thought it was entertaining. I didn't understand any of the context. I knew who Spock was, but I don't know who was number one.
Yeah, there's a lot for like hardcore fans to like be like, I get it. Like a lot of that. Yeah. So, but I'm glad it worked on someone who wasn't hardcore.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty entertaining. Though I was under the impression the whole time that Spock and Number One were going to make out or something.
Uh-huh. They're trapped in an elevator together.
Yeah,
and that's just what happens.
Yep, that's how it goes sometimes. So that's what I thought. But.
Well, in the end, they do end up having a sort of, a deep admiration for each other in the way that only two cold, logical dorks can. Right? Martha, you were less enthralled by it, it seemed.
Well, I'm just not as enthralled with that era of Star Trek. It's not my jam. But, I thought it was a good episode. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very entertaining. Yeah. And I also thought they were going to make out. And I was like, that's weird and not good because he's an ensign and she's the first officer, and that would just be bad.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah.
Even though I was yelling Mike out at the screen the whole time.
Yeah, it's giving a lot of fan fiction writers to you know, material to work with for decades, probably. Mm-hmm. Is that all our Star Trek news?
I think so.
They said the Picard air date was January 23rd, 2020.
So expect another Star Trek interlude in your video game news.
We might have to do a whole spin-off show.
Yes.
I'll be outside.
Do we have any gaming news, or are we just done with the episode now?
There's gaming news, y'all.
Yeah.
There was some union news.
Yeah, this is important stuff. Martha, you've got the rundown on all this, right?
Yeah. First, I guess Kickstarter is a big one. Mm-hmm. So the union, the employees of Kickstarter have formed a union, or are trying to form an official union. And the company is being super not great about it, which is sad because it's supposed to be a platform about coming together and making cool things happen. Mm-hmm. But apparently they don't understand how hypocritical they're being. And so they actually did some really awful things. They fired all the three main organizers of the union and tried to claim that they didn't fire them because of that, even though it's super obvious that they did. There's no other way.
Because it's illegal to fire somebody for doing union organizing, right? That is protected, specifically protected speech in the United States.
So, but when you are forming a union and your company is hostile towards that idea, you have to then be the best employee ever, because you can get fired for literally any other reason. So you're late one day and they're like, "Oh, you're out. That's why." Ha ha.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's actually about all about your union organizing, they wouldn't have cared otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So that super sucks. And then the Kickstarter union formally requested voluntary recognition of their union, which is, there's two ways to unionize officially. It's one, the company recognizes it voluntarily, and the other one is going through the NLRB, the National Labor Board, which for unions is better to go just the voluntary recognition route, because it's a lot simpler for people to say yes. They just have to sign a card and then they're counted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it has to just be a simple majority, I'm pretty sure. And with the NLRB, you have to do all this voting and secret ballots and everything like that. And they have these mandatory time limits, like things you have to wait for these things. And in that time, the company has every opportunity to bash the union and intimidate people out of, even though they're not supposed to, that's another thing they're not supposed to do, but of course they will, intimidate people out of, doing the process, because it's a more involved process.
Yeah. Right. And companies do have the right to lobby for whatever their position in the matter is. And so but because the power dynamic is such as it is, that ends up, just by virtue of it happening at all, it ends up being easily abused.
Yes.
And that does happen quite a lot.
So unfortunately, they did not voluntarily recognize the union. So now it's being forced into this other way, which sucks.
Yeah.
Hey, Kickstarter, don't do that.
And I mean, this is gaming related, not just because a lot of, games go through Kickstarter, but because this is a kind of startup model that exists in the game industry as well.
Yes.
And so it's people are looking to it to see similar cases elsewhere.
Sure. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll be watching that. They haven't called, the union hasn't called for a boycott of Kickstarter. So you should continue to, at least not yet. You should check they have a Twitter account. We'll link into the show notes. You should check to see and follow their lead on what to do on that.
Mm-hmm.
But as of now, of this recording, they haven't called for a boycott. So continue to support the projects that you want to support on Kickstarter, but maybe also sign the petition against them and support the union, because it's important. In other not great union news, Us 2, the makers of Monument Valley, and the recently released, it's where you put things together.
Assemble with Care?
Assemble with Care.
Ah, yeah. That came out on Apple Arcade, right?
Yes. And so I haven't gotten a chance to play.
Oh, dang, I wanted to play that.
I know. It looks really good, but right now they're being kind of jerks. Not mm-hmm. nice.
Right, they've sort of come out in no uncertain terms and say, like, we're anti-union. You know.
Oh, really?
What are you going to do, fight us?
Did they actually do that?
I think so. I'm not overstating the case, am I?
I don't know. I read an article, too, about it, and this one seemed more ambiguous than it sounds like the Kickstarter situation was.
Oh.
But, okay. I mean, to be fair, I haven't read a lot about, like, people getting fired because they were trying to organize a union.
I might be characterizing the reaction to it.
Yeah.
Rather than the actual messaging from them.
Sure, yeah. I only read the original, like, Game Workers Unite tweet, and mm-hmm. they're generally pretty radical about stuff. So
that one was obviously exaggerated, yeah.
But and then I read an article on it, and it seemed like it wasn't necessarily cut and dry a firing due to unionization.
Okay,
that's only the impression I got. I don't know that, and I didn't read into it a ton, so mm-hmm. it might not actually be the case. But that's what I had to say about it.
Well, it's interesting that as time goes on, we see more and more of these types of stories because these sort of mid-level AA studios, like the mobile companies that had big successes and are trying to be sustainable, mm-hmm. like they start to become going concerns and that they're, you know, operating companies, and eventually they become big enough where like they need to have proper labor relations. They're no longer just a bunch of scrappy people, you know, renting some office space and running on borrowed time.
Yeah.
They're now like a real thing. And so you see more and more of this in gaming.
Mm-hmm. Emails obtained by the IWGB, which is, I think, the union, apparently show bosses complaining about the workers' decision to spend time on company feedback, diversity schemes, and working practices, and for putting management on the spot.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So, not great.
Okay. Well. So they may feel that they sort of caught off foot on some of those issues, but maybe missing the fact that they're important issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that their game got featured this week as supporting diversity
mm-hmm.
And stuff in games is kind of hypocritical too.
Right. Right.
After they just fired someone for trying to stand up for other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and that person is also in danger of getting deported because their visa status is, so it's all just not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But ultimately, this is sort of inevitable. Like I mean, imagine yourself as management. Really, you're just you had a great idea. You put a good team together. You made something cool, mm-hmm. and then you have to keep it going.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you become successful long enough to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
I want to have some sense of like perspective and maybe even sympathy for how people can be put in this position as to the actions they take once that happens. If I think there's not a lot of sympathy to be had at that point. I think you need to, if you're not able to learn what it means to be responsible management, then mm-hmm. you sort of get no quarter from me. Mm-hmm. But I do have some sympathy for how you get yourself in that position. I don't know that matters a lot in terms of how you approach these stories, but it helps to think about, like, to understand a full picture, to give context to your outrage.
Yeah. Has any of you seen Superstore yet?
Not yet.
The show? No, dang it. Okay, last season they had like a whole arc about this kind of, about unionizing.
Yeah.
Like people in the store were trying to unionize and stuff. And Amy, who used to be just a regular employee, she got promoted to manager. She just got the position. So she was trying to crack down on it because she didn't want people to lose their jobs and she didn't want to lose her own job.
Yeah.
I mean, she just got promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there was a whole arc about like her conflict with that and like the person she's dating and stuff in this was actually starting the union and stuff. And so like there was a whole conflict.
Ooh, drama.
And it was really interesting and engaging, and nobody's watching that show and I'm really sad about it. they're talking about it for this season too. So yeah. Like,
well, that gets to the point a lot of times that when you do try to explore these situations, you're mm-hmm. like, well, you know, if a company gets in a position where they are unsustainable, if they were to have a union labor force,
yeah.
then is it responsible as a society for us to let them get in that situation in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Right. Like their growth was unsustainable then. They shouldn't have been able to hire the people if they weren't going to be able to pay them.
So what remedies and mechanisms do we have to say that, well, if you were to reunionize this labor force, then the company would collapse and they would all lose their jobs. Mm-hmm. Nobody really wants that. But like, that feels like giving up. If you just say that, well, I guess there's nothing we can do. But that's what happens a lot of times, is that these companies do grow in a way that is not mindful of the requirements that they need to submit to.
Yeah.
Until it's too late to acquiesce without, and then they have an honest position. Whereas if we give you health insurance, if we pay you a fair wage, then we're all going to lose our jobs. And that might, it's usually not true. If, you know, sometimes that might be their honest position, their honest feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think it's difficult to have, and that's why union negotiators, you'll see this a lot of times, at least in old world sectors, that they do tend to, they'll negotiate rates down to keep a company afloat. Mm-hmm. Like, it's important that unions need to have a seat at the table for these discussions.
Yeah.
So that it isn't just workers versus management, yeah. Right? And that's the important part of having the infrastructure of unions, is so that that if those concerns are real, then they can be assessed with all perspectives in mind. Mm-hmm. And I think that just these companies are not big enough to support that infrastructure. And so it tends to be a lot more adversarial than it maybe should be. But then again, there's that infrastructure does also good costs union dues, and there's a lot that ends up being difficult to manage. So all the people who are leading these efforts to unionize these workplaces, the task in front of them is so enormous, and they could use any support that, you know, if it's emotional support or just tweets, we need all our efforts behind these things, because it's so hard.
Yeah.
Harder than you even imagine.
Yeah. Yep.
We need to stop having not nice news on this show.
Not nice news.
Not nice news. Should we just skip the other part of the union news? This one more thing.
We did have another not nice union news, but we can skip that one, right? Okay. Martha, what do you think?
I don't care.
Okay, skipping it.
Long story short, just more bad Gearbox news.
Basically, yeah.
You kind of get the gist. All right, moving on.
Yeah, okay, so here's some cool things.
Yeah.
Jennifer Schurl, I'm sorry if I'm butchering the name. She's been, we talked about her before. She did that tweet about what things that games do to trick their audience into thinking they're really cool. I'm not describing it very well, but she's great. She made an article on Polygon that was about difficulty. That difficulty had been brought up. I guess it had been brought up again because Death Stranding released some more information about what the game has and what the game actually is. Mm-hmm. I still don't really understand it. There's baby battery cells and something. It's too much for me. I don't care. But
and also in Celeste, they changed the wording of their thing, because people pointed out that it could come off as condescending, and so they reworded it to be we expect this game to be challenging, so we have these things so that you can make the game fit that model better for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a lot of how this article works, because I think a lot of times when we talk about, as game developers, when we talk about difficulty, we're talking about a different thing than a game player is talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the disconnect. Because every time a new Dark Souls-esque game comes out, people are like, oh, it's too hard, add an easy mode. And then and some developers and other people are like, if you add an easy mode, then it'll ruin the experience for people. And, you know, there's a back and forth. But what I think what a lot of developers are trying to say is that they want players to experience the game in a certain way. Not necessarily to make it difficult, but so they can have a certain... There's a narrative arc that they need to experience in the game through the mechanics of the game. And the way Dark Souls works really is that you keep getting beaten down, but you learn about your encounters and stuff, and then you can use that knowledge to eventually win. And that's what that's like the way that game works. And so by making it and by changing the difficulty so that you can easily beat any encounter that would mess up that flow. There are ways to make it more accessible so people who have a harder time with that loop can get into the game better. But I think that this article does a really good job of explaining what a developer's mindset is when they're trying to figure out that flow, figure out what it is, what kind of experience the player wants, and why when we're talking about difficulty, maybe using the term difficulty isn't the right way to describe these kinds of concepts we're considering. It's really good. You should read it. I'm not doing the best job of explaining it, so read it.
Yeah, but the way that the two viewpoints can come together is like, okay, so the developer wants you to have this specific emotion and this specific experience playing the game, but because your body is the way it is, or your, you know, experience is the way it is as a person with different needs than than the developer thinks about, to make the game like the way that it is just out of the box is actually a different emotion for that, or a different experience for that player than the developer actually wants. Like the developer doesn't want them to never be able to beat it.
Yeah.
Like that's what we don't want, people to not be able to play. So really the difficulty settings and different things are for making the experience the developer wants. And I think that's the way that the two viewpoints can come together. And what this article talks about too.
Yeah, it does a good job of describing a lot of that stuff, and I love what Martha was saying too.
Yeah, it's, as designers, we want to work towards ultimately a subjective impression, not necessarily like a technical ideal. Something. And I think it's really easy when you're in the weeds programming these things. It gives really difficult to know that.
Yeah, there was a lot of emphasis in the article about like trust, how the player. Trust the developer to create the experience that they're looking for. And yeah, it's just all really good. Read it. I don't want to describe it more because it'll get people to not read it. Rocket League kind of removes loot boxes, sort of.
Is this nice news? You put kinda.
They kind of did in that, like, you know how loot boxes work. You buy a
under
thing.
The watchful eye of European regulators.
Right. Well, yeah, they're changing it because, like, you know, there's some stuff going down about making loot boxes. So the way that they changed it is, most of the time with loot boxes, when you buy the thing, you don't know what you're going to get. The way Rocket League changed it is that when you win a game or whatever, instead of getting a loot box, you get a blueprint. And so you know exactly what that thing is, and then you can purchase that blueprint. So it's still microtransactions, but like, you know what you're going to get out of it.
Oh, but
so
the randomization happens before you buy.
Yes, exactly.
It's still weird, but
So it's like, it's still like, you still have to play the game a bunch and grind, and then like maybe you might get the thing you want, you might not, but like you at least know before you make the purchase that this is the thing you want to get. That's a thing.
Better than nothing.
Yeah.
It sounds like it should. I mean, I don't know, but it sounds like it does remove some of the impulse people have.
Yeah,
put a coin and pull the lever.
Yeah, right? they're adding more things you can purchase, like an additional store or something, to offset some of the costs or some of the lost money.
It's funny because, like, ultimately, I don't think the solution is to sell more nonsense.
Right? Yeah,
but okay.
Yeah,
but like, it's very different to know what, I guess, I don't know. It might actually incentivize me to buy a thing because I usually don't. If I knew exactly what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I guess like the gamble comes from how much time you want to spend trying to get the game you're trying to purchase instead of how much money do you want to spend.
Right. Yeah. And ultimately the business model for loot boxes is a lot of money from whales, exactly zero money from most people, which is how it escapes the ire of most gamers. It's like, well, it's not ripping me off. But in this way, it might, like Martha, you were saying, it might encourage more people to buy a few things, and that might actually be more profit ultimately, and maybe that's ethically better. Maybe it's not that much different.
I think the problems still stand with the microtransaction thing, but I could see how this would encourage people to, like, less. It wouldn't encourage the, like, spend $2,000 that you don't actually have.
Yeah,
right. Right. Instead, it becomes more of a more honest market, which has always been my problem. Like, I don't like microtransactions generally. I even cosmetics, I don't like. But if there's an understanding between seller and purchaser that is an honest transaction, I have a much less of a problem with it. Sure. And so that seems like this is closer to that.
Yeah. So it is good news.
So nice news.
Martha, I don't know much about this one, but you were saying that Destiny 2 had a bunch of big changes and they did a good job with them.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people were mad on Twitter about the changes, but
I mean, a lot of people were wrong on Twitter.
Yes. In my opinion. So Destiny 2 changed from it all simultaneously released a new patch or like a new expansion. Changed servers from Blizzard's launcher and servers to Steam's launcher and et cetera, and made the game free to play all in one weekend.
Wow.
or 1 week, and they were down one day, one planned day, and then like 3 hours the next day, which I think for doing all of those things is an incredibly short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the number that I read was like 300,000 people were playing the first day because it was suddenly free to play. Mm-hmm. And like when a game turns free to play, usually servers like are just down for a week. And so I was expecting not to play for the whole week because I was just like, okay, well, we're just going to wait until that all gets done. Uh-huh. but Dylan is more into the like game, playing the game every day to get all the things every day. And he started playing. He's like, this is amazing. Like, there are so many people playing and there's not like there's doesn't feel like anything changed. Like it just it feels like, you know, things load faster. Like I've been noticing that the times between like going before you'd have to sit. Well, you still have to sit a little bit, but like going to a new planet took like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Not 5 minutes. It felt like 5 minutes. But now it feels a lot faster. And so I think like just expectation wise, I was totally blown away about how well it went. So, cool. Kudos to all the like devs who stayed up all night, probably working on that one. Because I think it went off without a hitch.
Yeah.
Especially with all those things.
I am actually now at least interested in Destiny 2 because my coworker Jason talks about it all the time and he really wants me to try it.
Play with us.
Now that it's free to play, I'm willing to try it, but I'm not a huge fan of shooters. So I'm not really.
It's a fashion game, though, Steven.
You can't even see your character. It's a first-person shooter.
When you're doing your ultimate, you can see your character.
Oh, I'm not good. Okay.
And like, isn't there like dances and stuff? And
there are third person. All stuff. Yes. And when you're on your speeder, it's third person. And
hey, I'll give it a try.
So that it's interesting. It's gone free to play because Google Stadia is coming out in about a month or so.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things they offered to all the people who bought in early was free copy of Destiny and all its expansions.
Oh, well, I mean, it's free to play, but I don't think you get access to all of that, all of those expansions. Yeah.
So, no, I mean, there might be somebody who's upset about it. It's just kind of interesting that, like, because I bought into Stadia just because I want to sort of see everything, and I didn't expect to be playing a lot of Destiny, but I'm like, at least I'll try it if it's just free in front of me.
Right.
But now it's free in front of me. I could just try it now.
Yeah.
So maybe I will.
Oh, yeah. Well,
we could do a fire team. Three of us. Yay.
Whatever that is. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, that's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app. Be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or are nice like us or you want to hear more Star Trek news because we know you love it.
Yep.
We need to know you're out there. So
if you don't, we're still going to talk about it.
Yeah, you don't have much of a say in this.
I know. I'm still here, right?
So leave a review and, of course, tell all your friends, too, so that they can listen to us talk about Star Trek. We want to hear directly from you, of course, so follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club, where my lovely wife, Dale, is doing our tweets.
Dale's doing great. Thank you, Dale.
And you can contact us by email if you got any particularly long-winded questions you don't want anyone else to see. I can't imagine why. contact at nicegames.club. Lastly, you can find out more about the show and your nice host, as well as get all the links and show notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.